Lee Raymond had no particular background in climate science, but as a chemical engineer whose doctoral thesis had concerned mathematical modeling, he considered himself adequately qualified to reach his own judgments on the underlying scientific questions. He was the first Exxon chief executive to have a doctorate. At the University of Minnesota, where he had earned his advanced degree on a scholarship, his academic mentor, Neil Amundsen, a renowned figure in chemical engineering, had instructed him, "Science is science, and don't let these damn politicians ever screw you up." During the 1980s, when global warming first emerged as a public policy matter, Raymond turned to the scientists in Exxon's oil exploration department, who by profession studied the history of the planet. The corporation's scientists told him that climate measurements on Earth were very recent relative to the planet's longevity, and that this was a reason to be skeptical about extrapolating data. Raymond also entered the incipient climate debate with deep skepticism about non-polluting alternatives to oil and gas, such as solar and wind power, which were relatively costly but might seem more attractive if climate change was a concern. "I've been there and done that," he would say of his history with green technologies. He was referring to successive management assignments he undertook during the late 1970s and early 1980s. In one, he served as second-in-command at New York-based Exxon Enterprises, which housed alternative energy initiatives, including solar power. The division had been conceived during the 1960s as a kind of in-house venture capital arm that might incubate new and profitable businesses outside of oil and gas. The embargoes and oil price shocks of the 1970s made this goal seem all the more appealing. Exxon went into the office equipment business, selling electronic typewriters, fax machines, inkjet printers, flat panel displays, voice recognition hardware, optical discs, home computers, and computer chips. The corporation studied the possibility of merging with Bristol-Myers, the drug maker, Colgate-Palmolive, the consumer products giant, and Hewlett-Packard, the computer company. In retrospect, such diversification looked like folly, but at the time it was a corporate fashion. Raymond's contribution to Exxon's experimental thrust was to recommend that it be shut down. He dumped the corporation's solar investments. Any business that required government subsidies to be viable was not for Exxon, he declared. In the summer of 1988, amid a record-breaking heat wave, James Hansen testified before Congress about the findings of a paper he had co-authored with six other NASA scientists. Using three different forecasts of releases of CO2 into the atmosphere during the century to come, Hansen and his colleagues predicted that even in the best case, future temperature changes would be sufficiently large to have major impacts on people and other parts of the biosphere. His work fortified the first attempt by governments to regulate greenhouse gases. Delegates to the 1992 Rio Earth Summit negotiated a treaty, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. President George H.W. Bush signed the agreement, and the United States Senate ratified it. The treaty divided the world's governments into categories, distinguishing between wealthy industrialized countries and poorer industrializing ones. It embraced the principle that wealthy countries should pay the greenhouse gas reduction costs of poorer countries, on the grounds that the privileged nations had created much of the problem in the first place and could afford to fix it, whereas it would be unfair to penalize or restrain the industrial growth of poor countries as they tried to lift their citizens out of poverty. The convention exacted no binding commitments from any of its parties. However, the governments and leaders of industrialized countries, including President George H.W. Bush, pledged to adopt national policies that would aim to reduce their overall greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2000. 3 years later, the United Nations Assessment Group, the IPCC, reported that most of the observed warming on Earth's surface since 1950 was likely to have been caused by human and industrial activity. "The balance of evidence suggests a discernible human influence on global climate," its summary report stated. That hardly offered emphatic confidence. Lee Raymond publicly rejected even the qualified formulations of the 1995 assessment. In October 1997, which would prove to be the fifth warmest year on the planet to that point since the mid-19th century, he flew to Beijing to deliver a speech to the 15th World Petroleum Congress, an event hosted by the People's Republic of China. At the time, the Clinton administration was in the last round of international negotiations that would produce the Kyoto Protocol, an enhancement of the 1992 Framework Convention, with commitments that would bind rich governments to reduce their emissions. Raymond's purpose in Beijing was to denounce the Clinton administration's negotiating position. He devoted 33 paragraphs of his 78-paragraph speech to the argument that evidence about man-made climate change was an illusion, and that a binding agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions was therefore unnecessary. Is the Earth really warming? Does burning fossil fuels cause global warming? And do we now have a reasonable scientific basis for predicting future temperature? In answer to the first question, we know that natural fluctuations in the Earth's temperature have occurred throughout history, with wide temperature swings. The ice ages are a good example. In fact, one period of cooling occurred from 1940 to 1975. In the 1970s, some of today's prophets of doom from global warming were predicting the coming of a new ice age. The Earth is cooler today than it was 20 years ago. We also have to keep in mind that most of the greenhouse effect comes from natural sources. Only 4% of the carbon dioxide entering the atmosphere is due to human activities. 96% comes from nature. Leaping to radically cut this tiny sliver of the greenhouse pie on the premise that it will affect climate defies common sense and lacks foundation in our current understanding of the climate system. It is highly unlikely that the temperature in the middle of the next century will be affected, whether policies are enacted now or 20 years from now.